Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Screen Talk, a very special Thanksgiving edition of IndieWire's weekly movie podcast. I'm Eric Cohn, the executive editor and chief critic, joined as always by Ann Thompson, our editor at large. And it's nice to be recording on a Tuesday. It feels like somehow...
No leaf blowers today.
No leaf blowers to interrupt our bickering, and also just a nice short week, which hopefully, you know, knock on wood, is not going to be interrupted by some crazy breaking news, because I know I could use some time off. I'm sure that you could as well. After this year, vacation has never been more valuable in human history than 2020.
I am so ready to let it go. As it said, I'm going to totally let it go. My daughter and I are going to hole up in a cabin in the woods.
That sounds about right. I'm off in North Fork with just a few friends, not a big crowd, but trying to get some downtime and sort of break away from city life for a bit. And just sort of taking the year into focus and thinking things through, because the weird experience that I've been having of late is recognizing that in spite of everything being on hold, we're so busy and our anticipation of 2021 continues apace. And it feels like, you know, even award season is on a timeline that more or less has a ring of familiarity to it. I mean,
it's just delayed a bit.
Yeah, it's a different timeline in terms of how it's unfolding, but we have certainly plenty to talk about, a lot of movies to anticipate still to come, and plenty that we've already seen. Just as we're recording, we've got the IDA nominations. Obviously, the headline item for me is that the mole agent was robbed, but what was your take on it?
Well, look, this year, there's so many documentary possibilities and so many strong films. This one seems... How do I look at this? All right. If you look at the past, they have 10 nominations. And last year, their winner was for Sama, which was one of the five final Oscar nominations. And four out of the three more from those 10 were in the final five. The Cave was the one that wasn't nominated and made it. And so American Factory, the eventual winner, was there. So they're reflecting the...
Good bellwether.
Yeah, they're very good. But they're slightly... I want to say that they lean into the humanistic, political, and verite side of the equation, so that Kirsten Johnson's Dick Johnson is dead, and My Octopus Teacher got a couple things, but you can assume that this is a more mainstream documentary sensibility.
So you
mainstream isn't the right word. No. I mean conventional, almost. Yeah, conventional, serious doc.
It's fascinating because the doc community itself loves to celebrate some degree of breaking the rules and unconventionality, but you never really quite know what's going to land in that respect, because, you know, it starts with the most attention grabbing stuff that is, you know, cutting edge because of its more journalistic properties. Although For Sama was interesting because that was a very delicate kind of handmade movie. That happens.
So heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. The trick here is to touch the emotions, and I would have thought that Dick Johnson is Dead would have done better.
And I would have thought Mole Agent, which is an incredibly poignant movie about the aging process, would have done better. But it's almost
I think it has to do with how many people have seen how many of the films, and the ones that get... I have to say, from the very beginning, Crip Camp, which I love and admire, and I think it's a great piece of documentary filmmaking, in a cynical way, does tick all the boxes.
Absolutely. I mean, it is a conventional piece of storytelling. It's certainly emotional, and it's an important subject matter, but it's not breaking the rules like a Dick Johnson.
No.
Although I have to say, the movie that really stood out to me seems to be the one that's churning along from, you know, its opening last week till this one, as we talked about it last week, Collective got, you know, all these rave reviews around opening, even though it's been on the circuit for a really long period of time. And that's a movie that is incredibly ambitious in terms of the way it uses cinema verite, but is also incredibly topical because it deals with democracy and crisis and
corruption.
Yeah.
And the health system in Romania. I love it. I hope everybody sees it. And one thing I did notice was that a lot of international films did do well. There seems to be some growing acceptance of, there's a whole range of movies that come out in Europe and around the world that we don't tend to recognize here. And I'm glad to see that that's starting to break down.
Yeah, I remember when I went to IDFA, the International Documentary Film Festival in Amsterdam, it's the biggest doc festival in the world, how eye-opening it was to me. This was, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. To be exposed to such an international market for nonfiction, because at least at that point in time, there weren't a lot of international documentaries, non-English language documentaries that seemed to really gain traction in the American market. And I don't know exactly what changed. It feels more like maybe a cultural shift overall, an openness to more international storytelling. I mean, the Honeyland effect certainly seems to be present this year. But again, people need to watch Mole Agent. That's a great movie. Collective is really good too. They're both, those are the two docs that are also, you know, the foreign submissions or the international submissions from their countries, from Chile and Romania, that I think should have a shot in both of those categories. So
I'm really sad to see, though, that inexplicably Naturno was overlooked by the ideas when it totally, at least cinematography, give me that. And thank God Italy submitted it for the Oscar. I'm really
pretty
pleased.
Amazing, actually, that it's the Italian submission when you have Pinocchio, which we'd been talking about before, recently acquired by Roadside Attractions, seems like the more obvious kind of, you know, it's a bigger movie and maybe even one that could have won a category like that, given all of those
facts. I don't know. That's an odd movie. We talked about this. It's too strange. I thought it was going to be The Life Ahead. I thought it was going to be the Sophia Loren Netflix doc movie.
Well,
but they went with the new trend, which we talked about last week. They went with the documentary submission for international.
Oh, and that filmmaker has been nominated before. It's
a beautiful film and incredibly timely. And it's going to get more attention as soon as it gets a distributor. That's part of the problem
going on there. But it is a very different kind of movie than the others we've talked about, because it's a collection of small moments. I mean, it's hard to even describe what this movie is.
It's extraordinarily difficult to do what he does.
Yeah,
and he did it with Fire at Sea, and he did it again this time even more effectively, spending 8 months just looking at the scenery and figuring out and meeting the people, seeing where he wanted to come back, and then coming back and filming it. It's an amazing thing.
It is sort of, I mean, like Collective, it's a filmmaker who embedded with his subject for this incredibly long period of time to get all the footage he needed to make this meticulous movie experience. Like, you don't feel like there's any gaps in that sense.
So, for example, there's a scene, there's a prison scene, and you're wondering, how did he get these women to show up and wail and moan and grieve inside the very cell that the guy that they're grieving died, the son died. And it just has this extraordinary power because of the location. And so a series of things had to happen for that to occur. And there's a similar sequence where he is absolutely capturing this woman talking on, showing us this cell phone conversation with her daughter who's been kidnapped. It's just heartbreaking. How did he get that woman to show him this thing? And there's a long story behind that.
Yeah, I do think that this has been a good year for innovation in documentary storytelling across the board, irrespective of, you know, what the IDA nominees tell us big picture wise. I mean, you look at the film we were just talking about, Naturno, but also Time, and also Gunda is another one where, I mean, these are films that are technically documentaries, but doing things with the form, with the image, with the way that the story is constructed that go beyond just showing us real life and allow the filmmaker's vision to kind of drive the show. And I think that's just really heartening to see, because it feels like there's been a constant back and forth within the doc community about getting outside of the more rigid approach to nonfiction stories.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And it's when art and reality collide in the best possible surprising way that you find the sweet spot. But I would also argue that if you go too far and alienate people, then you're not in a good place.
So do we think that there is a clear front runner among these yet? I mean, it really is hard to get a sense of which movie. I mean, I don't know how much people have seen.
Well, for example, Dick Johnson Is Dead did very well with Cinema Eye Honors, which is a different group, you know, a more art oriented group,
yeah,
if you like, indies. And then you have Crip Camp, very much in the running for the win, I would argue. I would suggest.
Well, I'm sure Netflix is going to get behind that one more than anything else, even if Dick Johnson is you know, perhaps the more exciting one from a, you know, cinema standpoint.
Absolutely. And the critics could help there. The critics are going to be very useful, as it were, in this situation.
So competitive. I mean,
do you have a sense of where the critics are? I mean, Boys State is wonderful, for example. That got Truffle Hunters is wonderful.
I think critics, the vote will be fascinating for, say, the New York Film Critics Group on December 18th, where you sort of see it happen in real time, because there's so many docs in contention and a lot of them have been really well reviewed. I mean, most of what we're talking about here has been positively reviewed off of the festival circuit or on release. So where does consensus come into play there? I have no idea. I don't think it's a Crip Camp. Maybe it's a Dick Johnson.
No, they'll see that as the front runner and they'll want to honor something else. This would be, they would go for an Eterno if they've seen it.
Yeah, I mean, again, big if with these sort of things. The bigger the group, the harder it is to tell what people have time to see. I mean, not
especially with the docs. But this year you would hope they would have more time.
I hope so.
With fewer films, narrative films,
and
right?
What else do they got?
It's like this. There's this many, you know, narrative movies and this many docs at this point.
Well, speaking of having a lot of time and to watch more movies, I certainly hope that the Sundance lineup, which we spent the last couple of weeks predicting for our wish list that went out this week, is an opportunity for more people to pay attention to this festival at that stage. We don't totally know how that's going to work, but I just kind of love the idea on some weird level, even though I'll miss the Park City experience of 50.
We're all going to be communing in this virtual ether.
Yeah. And there's, but the, you know, the, I don't know how accurate our picks are all across the board. I do some research on it, but it looks like a good, it could be a really good lineup.
I saw you included a couple of the Searchlight and A24, like Come On, Come On, the Mike Mills, which I'd heard was going to go to Sundance or at least try to go. And the Taika Waititi, I'm not so sure. I my sense was that was pushed back.
The wish list part of it gives us some leeway to maybe be a little bit unrealistic for some of those things. But again, it's like everything is subject to change. I mean, if they decided they want to take it, I bet Sundance would be thrilled to have it, right?
And David Lowery, I had heard, was way pushed back, but it makes perfect sense for that one to be at Sundance. They've been championing him for years.
Well, yeah, right? And that film had a festival. It was going to go to South by Southwest. It had
so
that.
It's done.
Yep. Yeah. It's been ready for a while, so it wouldn't be a bad idea to take something like that. But then you have just like tons of discoveries and docs on people like Lizzo and Mayor Pete. And
all these untitled docs that you stacked up at the end.
The bottom there, yeah.
Untitled on Lizzo. Yeah.
But I can't wait to see that. I mean, I don't know if it'll be a great movie or not, but it, you know, Lizzo is a great cultural figure. And it's always fun at Sundance to have those kinds of things. I mean, you won't get the Echoes premiere with the, you know, insanity of the crowd when the subject shows up or whatever. But
look, the thing that I always live for at Sundance is that moment at the Echoes where you've got, you know, Roadside over here and Amazon over here and, you know, Netflix over here. And they're all sitting in their, you know, Sony Pictures Classics, Tom and Michael are in their corner. You know, you and I could both lay out the geography of who's
it's
sitting
so
in what seat. Yeah. You know, they always go back year after year. There's this row of people from Roadside or whatever. And you say, hey, Howard, you know, you say hello to your friends and they're all there because they're about to decide whether or not to pick up the movie. And there's the huddle afterwards. And I just love that excitement.
The year,
along with wanting to see a new movie and discover it for the first time.
My favorite year in the Eccles, or favorite moment in the Eccles, was when Kevin Smith totally trolled the audience with Red State because all the buyers showed up and then he bought it in an auction for $1 at the beginning of the Q&A. Everyone was so mad. They're like, why would we waste our time watching your weird genre bending exercise?
They probably all walked out.
No, I mean, it was just really funny because he knew exactly what that scene is like. And I do think that whatever happens on the other end of this, there will be some kind of buyer's market at Sundance this year.
Buyers
will still want to be able to go to some kind of festival infrastructure to see how a movie plays with an audience when this is all over, however it ends. I think that,
by the way, this has nothing to do with Sundance. This is just an association. Yesterday, while I was waiting in line, a very long line for my COVID test so that I can get together in a pod with my daughter who has a roommate and therefore can't control her access to people. I was listening to Kim Masters, The Business on KCRW, which was an interview with Jim Giannopoulos, the head of Paramount. And it was fascinating to listen to him describe the realities of the marketplace and why he kept certain films, why he sold other films to Netflix, and the whole thing that has gone on. So if anyone's interested in that kind of thing, the minutia of studios navigating through the pandemic, he's an interesting one to listen to.
We got
to
get Jim Giannopoulos on this podcast. I mean, it is fascinating to see how some of the luminaries of the business talk about 2020 when they've spent years kind of regurgitating the same kinds of things or anticipating the changes in the market, because nobody anticipated the changes that this year has brought. And yet movies keep coming out. Studios are still trying to figure out solutions to either dump the product they had or make it successful in a very unpredictable future. And we've got many of them on the calendar now. So why don't we talk about that? Because there's actually several films that are coming out before the end of this year that we still haven't even seen. I mean, there is stuff around the corner. So what do you make of what we've got left?
Well, for one thing, Tom Brueggemann, bless his heart, did the heavy lifting and figured out what's going on with Nomadland, which is a big question mark. I mean, it's supposed to open on December 4th in theaters. What theaters are open? You know, how are they going to navigate that? So what they're going to do because of you guys, the critics, is these companies are going to qualify their films so that they can be eligible for the critics prizes, because they need that. They need that elevation. And then they'll open these movies in February or whatever it is. But also coming, there's these two Bleecker Street movies. The it's called, I keep locking this time, Wild Mountain Time, which is some Irish song that they keep singing in the movie with Emily Blunt, American playing Irish, Christopher Walken, American playing Irish, and then the
after
real
Chicago
Irish.
Chicago 7, we can't get into all the things.
About Jamie Dornan.
Yeah, exactly.
The heartthrob of 50 Shades of Grey fame. So that's John Patrick Shanley, the playwright and screenwriter who, of course, wrote Moonstruck. So the trailer made me sort of go, this might be fun.
It looks like a hokey,
but it looks like romantic hokum that could be amusing. And
people will watch it with that cast, and it does feel a bit like an HFPA kind of sweet spot.
Totally. Not Oscar-y at all.
Opening for it there. And then Bleecker also has Supernova, which looks like it could be, you know, strong performances. The reviews out of San Sebastian were solid enough.
Colin Firth and Stanley Tucci as a gay couple, and one of them is dying.
Yeah. Not the easiest selling point after Wild Mountain Time's premise, but, you know.
More Oscar-y.
It's more Oscar-y, as we like to say in these parts. And then, of course, we got Tom Hanks, donning his cowboy hat from News of the World, the Paul Greengrass.
That I'm excited about. And the trailer looks fantastic. And it has a slight comparative aspect to Nomadland in the sense that it's a road movie and they're going across the country, only this time it's post-Civil War, not now.
Yeah,
so I'm looking forward to that. I bet it's gorgeous.
It looks pretty. I mean, Greengrass is such a fascinating filmmaker because sometimes he really goes the extra mile. He can be a bit of a work for hire, but not.
I don't think of him that way at all.
Well,
when was he work for hire?
On the Bourne movies. One of them was great.
I don't think of that as work for hire at all. I think of that as high level achievement. I do.
Great job. You did.
He really did incredible things.
Yeah,
I think
he's done stuff. I mean, the thing is, he's a strong enough filmmaker that we forget like a Green Zone or whatever. You know, there's stuff in there that is sort of like
United 93. That's incredible. Incredible. And Captain Phillips, you know, these are really good movies. Just,
yeah, exactly. So do we get a great Tom Hanks performance to sort of round out the year? We don't know yet. But sure. So that'll be interesting to see an actual bona fide studio movie that's coming out into theaters. And then you have the whole Wonder Woman sequel situation. We'll actually get that on some level. I guess most people watch that on HBO Max, but
I'm excited to see that, but it's not, you know, how do I explain this? It's fun. It's just for fun. And in that case, I'm not feeling deprived of not seeing it on the big screen as much as I am Tenet. Tenet still bugs me. It bugs me that I have not seen Tenet properly. I saw it in a drive-in and it was horrible to see it that way.
That was the risk with that movie. There was never a good moment in 2020 to make that the big screen moment.
We never had theaters open in LA.
Right.
And you didn't have them in New York.
Nope. But I mean, I could have gone to New Jersey. I didn't feel.
And I could have gone to Irvine.
Yeah. So there were options and people took them.
I did go to the drive-in. That was a mistake.
Yeah, drive-ins, they have their limits. We've talked about that.
Nomadland looked good. It was fine. And I think there's going to be other drive-in options going forward. But
yeah, and we
expect Tenet isn't the right thing to see that way.
Yeah, it's a gamble for sure. So why don't we...
What else do we have? There's the Daniel Kaluuya yes. Judas and the Black Messiah, which is later in the year, in 2021. And that's the Fred Hampton Black Panthers.
That looks promising.
There's the United States versus Billie Holiday, which is Paramount, which is Andra Day as Billie Holiday, Lee Daniels directing. Yep. So that could go
always an
way.
Unpredictable ride. And then we have Cherry from the Russo brothers. So.
And that is based on the Nico Walker novel, which I read. And it's a dramatic, intense story. And Tom Holland is going to, I think, rock it.
So I guess it's weird to look at it this way, but it does feel a bit like we can't jump to any big conclusions yet about the overall award season narrative, because these films could all really make a dent in it, right? I mean, what would we say? Is there an obvious sense of what the best picture race looks like? It feels like we can't. It's just so early. I mean, a lot of these films could shake things up, right? No?
Well, you've got the whole Netflix lineup. I'm still fascinated I'm still fascinated by how that's going to play out. For example, I can tell you that Academy members are already seeing Mank. They're getting links. They're getting alcohol delivered to them. Whiskey.
You're getting meats and whiskey. What else do you need?
So you know, in the old days, it would be wining and dining and parties to get people to come and see movies. So this is the equivalent now in this part of the Oscar season. Later on, they're not allowed to do that after the nominations. But now they can. They can bribe anybody they want.
The more you know the rules, the more you can right up to that line.
I'm curious to see, you know, how I still think Nomadland is. You know, for example, the cinematographer won the Camera Image Award this week, and that's a very prestigious cinematography award. So this is cinema verite. This is taking these extraordinary American landscapes. It's not the standard issue. It's very Terrence Malick. It's not the standard issue fictional cinematography.
The way they shot that movie is extraordinary. So what do you think? Nomadland versus Chicago 7? Are we still in that mode, or is Mank somewhere in the middle of that? Is it that trifecta? Does Soul come along and bulldoze all of that stuff?
Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Some of these are actor fests, you know. That's I think Ma Rainey could do well too. Chicago 7 has the advantage of its resonance with the contemporary times.
If they can get Joe Biden to say he loves Chicago 7, I'm sure somebody's working on that endorsement right now with our new president elect many times over.
I don't know, maybe the politics are going to recede as we move forward, and The Prom is the great escapist musical. Oh,
yeah. Prom for
Best Picture. Talking about the Golden Globes.
I'm telling you, man, watch Mole Agent. It's just going to keep rising. It's an unpredictable year. So why don't we talk about viewing recommendations, because it is Thanksgiving, and I'm sure that people, even if they're paying attention to the year in cinema, some things are available, some things aren't available, and they want something that they can sit down with friends or relatives, hopefully in manageable numbers, to sit back and enjoy. What have you been watching? What do you recommend?
Well, I'm like everybody else. Apparently, the most watched miniseries on Netflix of recent vintage is Queen's Gambit, and I was in there early. Scott Frank is one of the best writers out there, and he's been around for a while. The Godless, the Western that he did was extraordinary also. So I can't recommend that highly enough. It's like I was addicted. I had to binge through it. You know.
Now, did you buy it
when it was over?
Did you buy a chess set when it was over? Because apparently sales are.
Yes, I know. I bought one for someone else. That's what I did.
For someone else.
Yes, exactly. And then The Crown, of course, I binged that. And Josh O'Connor breaks out of that as a major movie star.
Now, I've had this conversation with a few people already. Do you think that you need to have seen the earlier seasons of The Crown to get into this one?
Ideally you would, but there's the first two seasons with the young Queen Elizabeth and the romance with Philip and her learning how to become queen, her education, if you like. And then this round is the second. You should see both seasons of this round with Olivia Colman. I would go back and see one more at least.
Yeah, I definitely have some catching up to do there. I watched Queen's Gambit. I enjoyed it quite a bit. The thing that was most exciting for me about that was Anya Taylor-Joy, you know, really finding her movie star moment in a way through this series. I mean, she's been around and great since The Witch, and the Shyamalan film that she did was a really strong role, but it felt like this miniseries gave her the perfect platform to she carries every scene of this thing.
Extraordinary. And I love that she's been cast as Furiosa in the next Mad Max. Cool. And I absolutely love that Emma could come on strong now in the Oscar race just because of Queen's Gambit. That makes me happy. I love it when real life interferes with what would have happened.
All right. I have a very different viewing recommendation. Not necessarily for you, Anne, but maybe your daughter would get into it. I don't know.
Oh, now you're going to insult me. Okay, what?
It's the Eric Andre Show. This is prank comedy at its finest. And we've talked about Borat and how great that is. But Borat has, you know, a kind of a political inclination where he's exposing aspects of society. Eric Andre just wants to mess with people, and it's so amazing. The show it's this Adult Swim show he's been doing for 5 seasons, and he gained all this weight for this particular round. It's sort of, he plays off the tropes of a late night show, and he'll get guests to come on and then treat them in really weird, unpredictable ways. But he also does this man on the street type stuff where in one episode he makes it seem like he was a window washer who fell off a building, and he's all bloodied and there's like broken bones coming out of him, and he's walking around on the street, and everyone just starts freaking out. Like, do we help the guy? What are we supposed to do here? And then he reveals that there's another guy who fell down and that he was in a fight with him or something. And the scene keeps getting more and more complicated. And it's amazing because some people want to help and some people are just mortified or they take their phones out. Every episode has something like that embedded in the crazy weirdness of it. So he's like doing something similar, I think, to what Sacha Baron Cohen is doing, but turning up the kind of surreal insanity of that kind of prank art. And here's the best part. Every episode is like 10 or 11 minutes long. So just as you're like starting to process what this guy is doing, the credits roll and you're just left sort of gobsmacked. And every episode is directed by this guy, Kitao Sakurai, who made a movie that we actually premiered with Rooftop years ago called Aardvark. It was a very serious drama and it didn't totally take off. So then he moved out to LA and now is doing this crazy prank comedy stuff, which is working out much better. They had a movie they made together called Bad Trip that was supposed to premiere at South by Southwest that is doing the same thing on a more advanced level. But I highly recommend, if anyone wants something really outside the box and crazy, give this show a shot. It's really fun. And hey, maybe you and your daughter, after you get through, you know, binge watching The Crown all over again, you can, you know, find something a little bit different. That's the direction to go. Maybe.
My weird recommendation would be Jez Butterworth's Britannia, which is on Epix. Morrissey as a Roman general trying to conquer the Druids and his gods against the Druids. Really violent and punk and out there. Completely crazy. Yeah, people high on apothecary findings. It is spiking the water at the Roman camp. Cream coming on with I Feel Free. It's crazy. And I love it.
That's a pretty good set. So basically, we've just programmed everyone's Thanksgiving weekend. You can watch all of these shows and you're basically fine. And then you can go back to watching movies, of which there are many. So I hope you do enjoy your downtime. And I've said this on our staff call earlier, because, you know, there's so many of us who are workaholics at this time of year, but it is important for us to relax a bit, take the world into focus, and then, you know, jump right back into it, because we've got a ways to go with this award season, and I certainly am enjoying writing it out with you, but I'm already exhausted. So enjoy your weekend.
Have fun. You too, Eric.
All right, Ann. Bye.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.